ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the 3M third quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, October 28, 2010. I would now like to turn the call over to Matt Ginter, Vice President of Investor Relations at 3M.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our third quarter earnings call. Before we begin, just a quick reminder. On the morning of Tuesday, December 7th, we'll host our annual Outlook meeting at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in New York City. Those of you that are on our email distribution list should have received an invitation earlier this week. Please RSVP as soon as you can, and for those of you not on our list who would wish to go, just drop a note or call and we'll take care of you. Take a moment, if you would, to read the forward-looking statement on slide 2. During today's conference call, we'll make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views about our future performance and financial results. We base these statements on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Form 10-K lists some of the most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. So let us begin today's review. I'll turn the program over to George Buckley. Please turn to slide 3.
Thank you very much, Matt, and good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us on our third quarter call. It was another very strong quarter for 3M as we continue to drive our growth plan, and overall Q3 sales and earnings were in line with our expectations. And you can imagine I'm especially pleased with the 11% increase in organic volume against the backdrop of continued economic uncertainty and tougher comps. Organic volumes are now up 16% through September, and we continue to set sales and profit records. Q3 sales were again a new record for 3M, with the strongest growth coming in E&C, our electro and communications business, where sales were up 25%, display and graphic, where sales were up 19%, and industrial and transportation, where they were up 14%, and consumer and office, which was up an impressive 11%. And they, for example, exceeded $1 billion in sales for the first time ever in a quarter. Healthcare and safety and security are still robust, but both had some peculiarities to deal with in the quarter, which I'll explain in a minute. We continued to grow across all geographies, once again reinforcing our international growth strategy. Sales in emerging markets as a whole were up 25% in the quarter and now exceed 34% of total company sales. Asia Pacific grew 28%, Latin America grew 14%, and Canada 13%. Korea was up 48%, India 39%, Russia 32%, and the China region was up 31%, with Brazil up 25% as well. Operating margins remain strong at 23%, with all businesses staying at operating margins of 20% or higher. EPS was $1.53, up 13%, another all-time Q3 record for 3M. Free cash flow was $1.1 billion, with nearly 100% conversion rate. We also continued our accelerated investments in the future. We consider that these extraordinarily important in solving the puzzle of higher growth rates longer term. So, for example, we increased R&D investment by 6% year on year, and we supported our brands with increased advertising and merchandising spends of more than 30%. New business venture investments, which are those investments outside R&D, continue to track at about $100 million additional annual spend year over year. We put more capital work by closing the acquisitions of Arizant and Attenti Holdings, and we acquired a majority stake in Cogent Incorporated. And in early October, we also announced the acquisition of Alpha Beta, which is expected to close in the first quarter of next year. I'll address those acquisitions in more detail in a few moments. Overall, the strength of 3M's portfolio was again evident in the third quarter. Industrial and transportation, which is the giant of 3M's businesses, where sales rose a huge 14% with broad-based double-digit local currency growth in every single unit, led by Renewables Energy Division, which was up 83% in sales, and limited solely by manufacturing capacity, which we're adding as fast as we can. The growth was everywhere in the industrial. As examples, energy and advanced materials rose 25%, abrasives was up 18%, automotive OEM was up 17%, and industrial and adhesives and tapes, which is our largest business, was up 13%. As evidence of our success in automotive, Q3 worldwide automotive builds were up 10%, while 3M's organic volumes were up 18%. Year-to-date worldwide automotive builds are up 29%, while 3M's organic volumes are up 40%. Operating income for the sector rose by 14% to $446 million, with operating margins at 20.2%. The remarkable reinvention of this heartland of 3M's business by H.C. Shin and his team is nothing short of stunning. Healthcare. Sales rose there by 1.5% in local currency, which is much slower than we've seen in recent quarters. The most evident impact in the quarter was the reduced H1N1 related demand, which lowered year-on-year growth rates by a full 2 percentage points. You'll recall that H1N1 demand was the highest in the third quarter of last year. Low core demand seems to be related to the uncertainty surrounding Obamacare. You've seen that pattern reflected in pretty much every company reporting so far in the healthcare space. Hospital admissions and treatments are down at many US hospitals, so distributors are wary and evidently running down inventories. As an illustration, I recently read that 50% of Cincinnati hospitals have reported lower admissions. Higher unemployment and weaker financials seem to be causing people to put off elective procedures and even normal health care as well. We have no reason to believe that this is anything other than temporary effect and that it will pass. But clearly, there is caution everywhere, as we've seen similar slowing in Western Europe. Better news was that our skin and wound care business was up 7%. Food safety, absent of divestiture we did last year, was up 12%, and dental was up 4%. Operating income in healthcare was $326 million, with margins just short of 30%. At our December Outlook meeting, we'll give you some additional views on how healthcare reform might affect our business. But the short form is that the impact is likely to be felt most in expensive treatments and advanced devices, where we think rationing through tough pricing mechanisms is going to be the highest. Of course, the impact is just US-based. While it's clear everyone is going to be affected, we feel that our business, which is mostly consumables and broadly based internationally, is less likely to be problematic. Healthcare remains a very strong franchise for 3M. Moving on, local currency sales in display and graphics were up 18.4%, another excellent quarter. Optical system sales were up 28%, driven by new products for LED flat screen televisions. In September, we saw the beginning of the much talked about and highly anticipated inventory adjustment in the LCD TV industry, and we expect it to continue into the fourth quarter. This is clearly just a market adjustment, as our film attachment rates remain as strong as ever. The inventory correction cost us about $15 million of earnings in the third quarter. Overall, I'm very pleased with the way our optical business has matured and progressed. It wasn't that long ago that a hiccup in this business would cause us enormous heartburn. Yes, today we still feel it, and it's always going to be a tough industry that genetically turns on a dime, so to speak, just as it did in September. But we have a much better understanding of the market dynamics and how to manage them. We have an absolutely superb management team in place to do it. The rebuilding that we've done in 3M's traditional non-optical core over the last 5 years also means that our optical business no longer has to haul the sales and earnings growth wagon more or less alone. We're so much more diverse in growth now than we once were. When optical catches a cold, yes, it still means 3M taking a bit of nasty medicine, but the company no longer gets about a figurative bubonic plague. Continuing with display, commercial graphics continued its strong recovery with impressive double-digit sales growth. Growth is coming from innovative new products right across and up and down the market spectrum. We also had positive growth in traffic safety systems, quite an accomplishment, really, considering there's still no highway funding bill in the United States. Total display and graphics operating income rose 37% to $282 million, with margins of 26.4%. Consumer and office had a great quarter too, significantly outpacing growth at the retail level, and they topped $1 billion in sales for the first time ever. Joe Harlan and his team drove 11.1% local currency sales growth with a full 9 points of organic growth. Yes, 9 points, and another 2 points from acquisitions. Office products and the DIY business both achieved double-digit local currency sales growth, and home care and stationery products reached high single-digit growth too. As was the case last quarter, we increased advertising and merchandising investments by over 30% year on year, and that push is advancing many of our key brands. Operating income for Consumer Office was $235 million, with margins of 23%. Safety, Security and Protection Services sales were down 1.6% in local currency. Operating profit for SS&PS was $164 million, with margins of 20.2%. This is truly a wonderful sector, but as in healthcare, H1N1-related demand did not repeat in the third quarter of 2010, in this case impacting year-on-year growth for SS&PS by a whopping 10%. And of course, these products were also at margins strongly accretive to both the security segment margins and to 3M as a whole. Consequently, operating margins declined 700 basis points year-on-year, which is entirely explained by H1N1 and secondarily by the impact of inventory corrections in the roofing granules business, both of which we consider to be temporary effects. Going forward, safety and security margins in the fourth quarter will still be negatively affected by these same factors, as well as by purchase accounting for Cogent and Attenti. These lapping impacts are purely an arithmetic issue with nothing fundamental to be concerned about. Margins will normalize around 23% once the H1N1 comps finish passing through the system sometime in the first half of next year. In the core of this business, we saw double-digit sales increases in security systems, corrosion protection, building and commercial services, and also in occupational health and environmental safety, if we exclude the H1N1 effect I mentioned earlier. Electro and communications. Sales in local currency were up 24%, with currency translation adding another 1.5 on top. I think it's important to note the continued strength in our business servicing the consumer electronics industry. For example, local currency sales were up 59% in electronic markets materials and 30% in electronic solutions division. In addition, we saw double-digit local currency sales growth in electrical markets, which mainly serves utilities and electrical distribution. Local currency sales were up slightly in the telecom infrastructure business also. Electrocommunications drove operating income of $173 million, which is up 49%, as operating margins expanded 3.6 percentage points up to 22.4%. So all in all, even with some transient H1N1 and raw material cost impacts, this was another very strong performance across the board for 3M. I'd like to speak now for a moment about acquisitions. We significantly strengthened our safety and security business by adding Attenti and Cogent to their portfolio. Cogent brings to 3M a technology platform that we didn't have previously, with its finger, palm, and iris-based biometric technologies, and Attenti positions us well in a segment of law enforcement that we didn't have access to until now, as well as opening opportunities for us in the elder care and other industries. Both of these businesses operating markets growing at greater than 20% annually. We see Attenti as a completely new high-growth platform. We've long believed that high-value asset tracking is a great future business. The logical application extensions to military, first responder, elder care, mobile hospital assets, mining safety, animals, and even your children if you desired it, are massive. In healthcare, the acquisition of Arizon bolsters our infection prevention business by solidifying our position in the growing area of patient safety with its line of patient and body fluid warming systems. This market is growing at double-digit rates and is likely to accelerate since the focus on body core warming is specifically laid out in the new healthcare legislation and is seen as a fundamental method to the reduction of cost by control of hospital-acquired infections. Today, this is predominantly a US business, and we intend to leverage 3M's world-class international footprint to expand it overseas. Alpha Beta in our industrial segment perfectly exemplifies our pyramid strategy in action by adding B and C tier products to our own line of tape offerings. Alpha Beta is a world-class, ultra-low-cost tape manufacturer located in the China region. Over the coming years, we expect growth rates to be very high and will insource a lot of currently outsourced tape manufacturing to Alpha Beta. This is positioned right where the fastest growth is, both geographically and segment-wise. And importantly, it establishes a low-cost tape manufacturing beachhead in Asia, something we didn't have before. So this is a great business, a great addition to one of our most powerful core businesses. It's not an overstatement to say that 3M is the greatest adhesive tape manufacturer in the world, so investing here is perfectly logical for us. On R&D, you all know that for 3M, investment in innovation is investment in our future. In the third quarter, R&D investments were north of 5% to sales, and we expect to maintain this level going forward. As a result of these investments, our new product vitality index is now in the 32% range as we continue to drive innovation right across 3M. More than a year ago, we forecast that economic growth would slow in the second half of 2010 in some of our markets. Some folks disagreed with us, thinking that perhaps we were being too conservative. But I think things have played out largely the way that we anticipated, and so the trend is no longer a surprise. Part of it is purely arithmetic year-over-year comparisons, but part is also clearly economic. Looking ahead, the good news is that we see no signs of any broad-scale, broad-based double dip. Even if it does come, we believe it would be limited in geography, short in duration, and relatively mild. Moreover, growth remains good in those geographies where you'd expect it to be good, and it's hard where you'd expect it to be hard. No, we have not seen China slowing, and ironically, if the RMB does begin to appreciate, it would provide 3M mostly net positive benefits. After all, we're highly profitable there and the net importer to China. Excluding Japan, which itself had a 10.5% local currency growth in the quarter, similar positive observations could be made for Asia broadly, and for Latin America, the Middle East, and Central and Eastern Europe. The practical reality is that those companies with broad footprints in emerging markets will prosper as long as they remain able to compete with small and fast-growing local competitors. And for that, you absolutely must be cost competitive. But the near-term implications for the United States and Western Europe, Germany apart, are uninspiring. We expect an extended period of slow recovery in these markets. The best news is that the recovery in automotive and any positive movement in housing will look like enormous percentage changes. More broadly, US factory utilization remains low, which implies a long recovery period in commercial construction. Inventory transients in the industrial distribution channel have died down, so they're no longer a help. Unemployment remains, I think as we all know, the key to the puzzle, particularly in the United States. Nothing in the end market suggests big changes in anything, plus or minus, except the numbers will look arithmetically slower. Invention and penetration remain the keys to growth for us in these slower markets, and that's why the R&D and business development investments that we've spoken about earlier are essential. Breakthroughs in power distribution, smart grid, solar, environmental, and innovation more generally still provide big opportunities. Differentiation still works, and 3M has that in spades. Some gradual geographic realignment of our sales force may be needed to fully take advantage of opportunities in faster-growing states and market spaces. With that, I now turn the call over to Pat for review of the third quarter P&L.
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Please turn to slide number six. Sales rose 11% in the third quarter, which was the fourth consecutive quarter of double-digit sales improvement. Organic volume rose 10.8% in the quarter. Our growth was 1.4 times worldwide industrial production as the business continues to expand its size in terms of sales, operating income, and economic profit. We drove 23% organic volumes in Asia-Pacific, with both consumer electronics and the base business increasing over 20%. So our strategy around both export-oriented business and meeting local demand is working very well. Organic volumes grew 13% in Latin America, 6% in the U.S., and 4% in Europe. So no geography was left behind. Acquisitions added 50 basis points to growth in the quarter, and selling prices declined just 20 basis points year on year. Third quarter gross profit dollars grew 9% year on year, and notably were more than 5% above Q3 2008 levels. So our strategy to grow the business is resulting in higher gross profits. Gross margin percent declined 90 basis points, with higher raw materials accounting for about one half of the change. Material inflation was approximately 2.5% year on year. Sales mix also negatively impacted gross margins in the quarter. As an example, H1N1 related respirator demand was strong in Q3 of last year, and factory utilization levels in the businesses were very high. Those same factories ran at more normal levels this year. A lower sales contribution from healthcare, coupled with its attractive gross margins, also impacted the mix negatively. Helping to mitigate these factors were savings due to yield improvements, waste reduction, faster line speeds, and ongoing productivity, driven by our Six Sigma teams around the world. In the SG&A area, sales and marketing investments rose 18% in the quarter, while administrative and other costs were up just slightly. So in total, SG&A was up 13%. We anticipated this in our planning as we mobilized throughout the year to increase both sales coverage and marketing strength, particularly in faster-growing emerging economies. In addition, we increased investment in advertising and merchandising by over 30% year-on-year to drive higher sales volume with our customers, both now and into the future. We invested $354 million in research and development in the quarter, up nearly $20 million over last year's third quarter. Operating income was $1.6 billion, the highest of any third quarter in our history, and margins were an outstanding 22.9%. All six reporting segments posted 20% plus margins, the third consecutive quarter that we have accomplished this feat. Our corporate miscellaneous reporting segment showed a smaller loss this quarter versus the first 6 months run rate. This was largely due to lower corporate spending, various compensation-related adjustments, and a few other miscellaneous items. By its nature, profit and loss in this segment can swing a bit from quarter to quarter. On a September year-to-date basis, the operating loss in corporate miscellaneous is larger than 2009 by $117 million, with the difference largely attributable to higher pension expense. The third quarter tax rate was 26.8%, down about 5 points year on year due to lower effective international rates, and reflects some of the great progress we have made in reducing our tax rate. We expect that the full year reported tax rate will be approximately 28.5%. Earnings were $1.53 per share on a GAAP reported basis, an increase of 13%. This also was a third quarter record for the company. Now let's look at the year-to-date results, so please turn to slide number seven. We are very pleased with how the business has performed thus far in 2010 and are running ahead of our expectations going into the year. September year-to-date sales are up 17%, nearly all driven by organic volume improvements. Asia and Latin America have been the stars in terms of geographic performance. On a business-by-business basis, growth has been the strongest in electrical communications at 31%, display and graphics at 29%, and industrial and transportation at 22%. These three businesses have done an outstanding job at launching new products and taking share in a number of important and growing industries, including consumer electronics, automotive OEM, general industrial, and renewable energy. Year-to-date, SG&A spending is up 11%. Investments in sales and marketing are up 14%, a combination of more sales-related feet on the street in growing markets, further investments to strengthen our marketing capability, and as you see on this chart, a near 30% increase in advertising and promotion to drive current and long-term growth. Tight control over G&A remains a top priority for the company, as it helps feed additional investment in sales, marketing, and R&D. On a year-to-date basis, G&A is up only 5% compared to sales growth of 17%, so we continue to drive leverage in this area. Operating income is up 33% year-to-date, and operating margins are over 23%. All businesses earn 20% plus margins through the first 9 months of the year. The reported tax rate through 9 months was 28.3%, down from 31.2% in 2009. Recall that our tax rate was 34% 5 years ago, so we're making excellent progress in this area. We expect the rate to tick up a bit in 2011, which I'll talk more about in a moment, but we remain committed to further long-term reductions in our rate. Evolving the manufacturing base to lower tax jurisdictions will be critical to making this happen. Finally, year-to-date net income and earnings per share rose 40% and 36% respectively. Return on invested capital was a strong 22%. Please turn to slide 8 for a balance sheet and cash flow discussion. Free cash flow was $1.1 billion in the third quarter, and we converted nearly 100% of net income to cash. This was $466 million less than the third quarter of 2009, driven largely by three factors. One was pension contributions, as we contributed $241 million more than we did last year. In addition, the year-on-year difference in cash taxes paid was $111 million. Finally, working capital changes reduced free cash flow by $175 million to meet the volume demands. On a year-to-date basis, we generated nearly $3 billion in free cash flow and converted 94% of net income to cash. Net working capital turns remained steady year-on-year at 5.1 turns. We had some improvement on the receivable side, offset by somewhat higher inventories, aligned, of course, again, to the higher growth rates. Acquisition activity has been light in the first three quarters of the year, but as we have recently announced, and George just mentioned earlier, we'll close a number of deals here in the fourth quarter, putting to use some of our excess cash. Through 9 months of 2010, we returned more than $1.5 billion to shareholders via a combination of dividends and share repurchases, a 43% increase versus 2009. With three quarters of the year behind us, let me address our outlook for the year. Please turn to slide number 9. We now expect that our organic volume growth will come in between 13.5% and 14% for the year versus a prior forecast of 13 to 15%. We also expect that earnings per share will fall somewhere within the band of 570 to 574. This range includes estimated acquisition-related dilution of approximately 6 cents per share related to the recently closed deals, which of course we had not factored into our July guidance. On a GAAP reported basis, we expect earnings to finish for the year between 559 and 563 per share. We anticipate that operating margins will be approximately 22.5% for the year, which also reflects previously mentioned acquisitions. The full-year tax rate is expected to be at or just below 28.5% on a reported basis, and average diluted shares outstanding should be in the band of 725 to 727 million for 2010 in total. Please turn to slide number 10. As Matt mentioned, we'll be hosting an investor meeting the morning of December 7th in New York. We'll address our detailed 2011 outlook at that meeting, but I thought I'd give you a preview this morning. So please wait for the December meeting for some more specifics. At the moment, we're targeting 2011 sales growth of 11%, assuming a couple points of acquisitions and current FX rates. We are driving the business to deliver 35% incremental margins on our organic growth. Outside of those incrementals, currency should be an additional income tailwind for us, again reflecting current exchange rates. We estimate that pension expense will be a 30-cent headwind next year. This assumes that the 4.86% discount rate at the end of the third quarter falls until year end, which in our opinion is an unsustainably low level. But regardless, it is down nearly a point from 577 that we used at last year-end. The 2011 expense estimate also assumes U.S. asset returns of 11%, which was our actual performance through the first 9 months of the year. Finally, the 30-cent headwind assumes that we make an additional $700 million contribution to our pension plan, assuming current discount rates and asset return performance levels hold. But candidly, the actual contribution may differ. If rates and returns move our way, which have happened thus far in October, we would likely contribute much less than this. We don't have any mandatory funding obligations. What is most important for us is to be adequately funded at year end and to keep the earnings headwind at a manageable range. The anticipated expense increase is due to two factors. One is the amortization of prior period investment returns, namely the 13.6% loss experienced in 2008. I want to remind you, though, this was far better than the 30% market decline for that year. The second factor is the absolute level of interest rates. Lower rates, of course, increase the present value of liabilities, which in turn increase future pension expense. We also anticipate an 8 cent per share headwind due to a compensation policy change. As a reminder, prior to 2009, we allowed employees to bank a certain amount of unused vacation. Effective January 1st, 2009, we moved to a use it or lose it approach, and employees were given 2 years to exhaust their previously banked vacation. This change resulted in an 8 cent per share benefit in our 2010 results, which does not repeat itself in 2011. This item is non-cash, income statement only. Helping to offset this will be additional productivity gains due to the fact that employees will have less time off in 2011, which will help rein in additional hiring. Finally, at this early stage, we're expecting a 2011 tax rate of 30% or slightly below versus an estimated reported tax rate of 28.5% for 2010. We have some more work to do before reviewing our final 2011 plan with you in December, but this should give you a sense of where we are headed. In summary, I would conclude that our year-to-date results are very much aligned with our longer-term strategy. We're driving faster growth, reinvesting to secure the future of the business, and maintaining best-in-class margins and return on capital. Our balance sheet remains in great shape, so regardless of the shape of the economic recovery, we'll have a significant funding advantage. That concludes the formal portion of today's conference call, so let's begin the Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before answering your request. Please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. One moment, please, while we compile the Q&A roster. And our first question comes from the line of Robert Cornell of Barnum. Please proceed.
Hey, everybody.
Good morning, Bob.
I've got a couple of questions. Display and Graphics had a good quarter, but I think you mentioned an inflection point in September. Maybe you could just go over that a little bit more, and you talked about the impact on the fourth quarter. Maybe just to give us some little visibility there, please.
Well, obviously, Bob, you know, you see
about every 2 years, you see these kind of corrections that take place in inventory. The great news for us is we haven't lost any attachment, as far as we can tell, which is unlike what happened to us before. So this has probably just started. I think it'll go through the system. The impact, potential impact in the fourth quarter that we see, of course, in the end, you don't know with this market. It changes so rapidly, but the net impact we think might be as much as $70 million in our fourth quarter earnings. But
that's operating profit, George.
That's on profit, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of numeric number there, Bob. But I think what has really happened so well here is we've got very close to these customers. They like our innovation. They've kept us in the product, and that is for us the most important thing. and we'll live through these things. And as I said, you know, we've had these things come and go before. This time, of course, it puts some pressure on earnings, but it's not the kind of ouch that it once would have been.
Got it. So you mentioned the Alpha Beta acquisition. You talked about bringing some product back in house that had been outsourced, and the whole push into that adjacency. I mean, but what sort of profitability level would Alpha Beta see relative to the 3M average when you have that strategy completed?
Well, I mean, at their current operating margins, Bob, they would be dilutive to 3M. But when you bring them all together, I mean, first of all, we don't need a lot of SG&A in that area. It's not always branded product, and we think it's just there's huge growth and leverage opportunities in that space, Bob. I mean, we were selling into that space and paying higher prices than we'll get from Alpha Beta. So actually, I think it'll be helpful to us in the long run, and obviously gives us that competitive positioning at the bottom of the marketplace, which has always been the place where we've got attacked by growing sort of low-cost competition. So this is strategically very important for us, not only to provide growth, but to provide a kind of bulwark to our higher margin, higher performing tapes, higher up the market pyramid. So very important, I think, Bob.
Yeah, Bob, I was just going to add, just to kind of build on George's comment, at the either the divisional level, which that's our largest division, is adhesives and tapes, as George mentioned. Our objective there is we'll pull this in, and through some of the cost savings we get through insourcing and the like, that the margins in that business should hold to where they're currently at, at the divisional level.
So the margins at the division level would be the same when you consolidate Alpha Beta and push forward?
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Thanks, Bob. We got a pretty long call question queue, so I think we need to move on. Get back in the queue if you would, and if we have time, we'll pick you up again. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Scott David of Morgan Stanley. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Guys, it wasn't 100% clear to me why you didn't have a little bit more of a margin pull through in industrial and transportation. I understand there were some raw material headwinds and such, but given that type of growth rate in that type of business, maybe would have expected a little bit more of an incremental margin. Can you give us a little bit more detail on that?
Yes. First of all, Scott, a 20% margin in an industrial business is a damn good margin. We're obviously investing in that business. We're investing in new technology, putting a new investment in a lot of the emerging markets and so forth. The reality is the margin in that business will be probably, the 21-22% range over time. It was a little bit lower this quarter, but nothing to be alarmed with. It's something that we've been kind of expecting through time, based upon the investments that we're making. So no alarm from our side at all as to where the margins in that business are.
Okay, I understand. So the answer is basically investments that you. Now, would we think of that as investments? Some things that you pulled forward, just given how strong of a year that you had, discretionary spend and such that were pulled forward in the quarter.
Yes, Scott. I guess it would be fair to say, and I think if we go back a couple calls, that in my comments really for the year to date is that we are running ahead of where we thought we would be for the year. So we had a number of investments lined up that if conditions warranted, effectively, we would pull into 2010 here. So that's kind of, this is one example of an area that's occurred.
Okay, I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks,
Scott.
Our next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague of Vertical Research Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
Can we, I'll make my question, my follow-up around the deals. First, when you look at what you've acquired here, George, I would say they have kind of the feel of being a bit more equipment-related companies, with the exception of Alpha Beta, rather than being kind of material science-related companies, which is kind of the core strength and bailiwick of 3M. And so just as a matter of kind of philosophically, you know, when you look at adjacencies for your businesses, how you manage that, the challenges of that. Some of these are software companies in a sense. And, you know, just the kind of the DNA for the organization to kind of do these type of deals going forward.
Yeah, it's a good question, Jeff. It really is. We've long recognized that one of the big growth areas for the future is going to be kind of software and electronics. In fact, if you look at our strat plans, Jeff, over the last few years, you see this kind of creeping in bit by bit. In fact, maybe not creeping anymore, it's galloping. And so we recognize that this is going to be more of the future, or a bigger piece of the of our portfolio in the future. And if you look at some of these high growth spaces, ultimately they're about sort of tracking and decision making that ultimately is connected to electronics and software. So I think you're right in that area. These are very high growth areas, and we have some sort of related businesses already. Jeff, you might remember we got that library equipment business that tracks library books. This is kind of, in a way, a lateral extension of that kind of, instead of tracking a book, you're tracking a person or tracking an elder care person. So they're not that different as you might think if you think of them in that context. But I think ultimately, Jeff, while we will always have this heartland of material science, I think we will see some movements into these kind of equipment-related businesses. But you're not going to see us getting into sort of big, giant machines like some of our contemporaries have. This is going to be kind of small, carry-with-you type stuff on a much smaller scale than those sorts of things. But well spotted.
And then I was just wondering, as the follow-up, Pat, if you could help us on the 11% you suggested for next year as kind of a baseline, given all these deals are kind of closing at different times, what kind of annualized deal impact is included in that 11%?
I guess all I'm going to say right now, because we still have some more work to do between now and December, is we have a couple points of acquisition-related growth in our in that 11% number for next year. A piece of it is the deals we've just announced, and there's a small provision for stuff that obviously is currently in the system.
Thank you a lot. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Our next question comes from the line of Stephen Winokur of Sanford and Bernstein. Please proceed.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Hi, Steve.
I know, Pat, I know you're going to give all the detail in December on 2011, but just on the guidance that you did provide here, should we be adding that to adjusted or GAAP numbers if we're trying to think ahead to whatever that 55 or 60 cents that it looks like is implied is on top of?
Steve, I'd come off of our GAAP numbers. When we present our plan, we'll come off of our GAAP numbers.
Okay, great. And then without getting more into detail there, for the quarter, pricing was a 20 basis point headwind, I think, and 140 basis points of that was in Asia Pacific. Am I correct in assuming that was mostly in optical and display and graphics, or were you seeing any more pricing headwinds in any of your other businesses?
No, it really remains in the consumer electronics space, primarily optical.
Steve, this is Matt. Just as a reminder, generally speaking, electronics in total for the company is about a 1 point impact on price in any given year. So ex electronics pricing would have been up a little bit for the company.
Okay, and then the raw material 2.5%, was that concentrated in any particular segment?
Well, first of all, it's more in the U.S. than it is international at this point in time, and it's probably more in our industrial related business at this point in time. It is cutting across, most of the businesses, but industrial probably has the largest piece of it.
Okay, great. I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Our next question comes from the line of Steven Fusa of J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Just to be clear on, I guess, the fourth quarter numbers, I think the
performance, the organic performance this quarter was good. It was about in line with what kind of the comp would have suggested. But your comp gets a lot tougher in the fourth quarter, and you're still really calling for here maybe just a couple point degradation in the growth rate. Can you talk about, which end markets are getting better from a kind of, comp perspective that's going to help you out? And I guess just where these new products are layering in the fourth quarter, so where we would expect kind of the best organic performance here in the fourth quarter, and then one quick follow-up on 2011.
Well, I think obviously we talked about some kind of correction in the display and graphics business, Steve. And I think we're still going to be carrying forward headwinds on H1N1. So they'll be the tougher comps. I mean, all of these businesses were growing very, very rapidly last year, and so it's not going to be easy. But the forecast from our businesses and our own triangulation suggests, you're looking at something like an 8% or so growth rate. That's what the number looks like, Steve. It's what the arithmetic shows, and so far the arithmetic has carried us forward. I think in the healthcare business, I think it's going to get a little bit easier, is my guess. I think we've got some stuff which looks like it's bettering in that area, so I think that probably will get a little bit better. I don't expect the industrial businesses to do all that much different. I think we might see just mild betterment in SS&PS. As H1, the back end of the fourth quarter was easing a little bit, so I think it's a mixed bag, Steve. But all in all, we're comfortable with the projections that we've made.
Yeah, Steve, and remember that if you back into the number, it's in that 8 to 9 range, which of course, if you look at it on a year over year basis, and you look at what a performance was last year, what you're doing, which we had, I think, a 4% growth last year in the fourth quarter, it is really an improvement in performance. But when you look at kind of where our long term growth rate wants to be, needs to be, that's consistent with our plan. Electrical communications continues to run, very, very strongly, and they'll have a continued very strong fourth quarter here. There's no reason, as George said, industrial will continue to have a double-digit, growth here in the fourth quarter. And surprisingly, even optical being down, it will still be up on a year-over-year basis.
Year.
It just won't be as good as it has been in the previous, in the previous couple quarters. So all in all, it's a very solid performance across the board.
Okay, and then just one follow-up quickly on 2011.
I'm surprised. I'm sorry I even gave you guys a 2011 outlook now. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, there's a reason for everything, I guess.
Yeah, right.
So the share count number got bumped up. I think year to date you're looking at something in, kind of the 724, 725 range.
Yes.
What's the fourth quarter ending share count in that number?
So, Steve, you must be trying to fill out your model, aren't you? The exit rate's about 731.
Okay, so that's a headwind next year as well.
Yeah, and what you'll see, kind of when we work through it is, we'll give you an assumption as to what our share count will be next year when we meet. We just haven't solidified that answer yet.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Our next question comes from the line of Terry Darling of Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Thanks. Hope we don't disappoint you here, Pat, with more 2011. We do appreciate all that. If we look at the balance sheet, net debt to cap now negative, can you, George, talk a little bit about how you're thinking about the pace of acquisitions? Because you got plenty of firepower here, but presumably valuations are moving up. And then maybe dovetailing off the share count perspective, you clearly would have room to do some buyback as well. And where is that in your thinking at this point?
I think you can certainly start with the assumption, Terry, that we're going to have an anti-dilution strategy, and we've been trying to figure out finally what our position is going to be on more share buybacks. But I think you are right. We probably will continue at a similar pace on acquisitions next year. There's no reason to believe that it will be significantly off where we are today. Of course, You can't define that exactly at this stage of the game, but I think there is one school of thought here that says we might advance some of our share buybacks next year a little bit above what we've done in the last couple of years. So it's very much in the thinking, Terry. Balanced approach. We'll have a higher capex number next year, perhaps 30, maybe even 40% higher than we've had this year. So you're up in that sort of $1 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion. We've got a lot of demand in Asia, a lot of demand in some of these new market spaces, in abrasives, in the renewables energy area. So. You know, we're going to have a sort of balanced need, I think, but I do agree with you. It probably will leave some room for a little bit more share buyback next year than perhaps we've traditionally done in the last few years.
Okay, and maybe I'll try to get away with a clarification with this one, but on the 11%, revenue growth in 11, couple points in acquisition, point on FX, organic implied around 8, is that fair?
I will give you more, okay? But you're at least in the right stadium.
You're in the right zone.
Okay. Well, let me make this then my real follow-up.
Hey, no one, come on, Terry. What?
35% incrementals next year flow through. We do obviously across the industrial spectrum see rising raw material prices. Presumably that means you've got to accelerate some of your own price increase activity there. You know, just talk about your confidence on managing a tougher raw material environment in 2011 around sustaining that 35% flow through at the segment profit level.
Well, first of all, Terry, it's something we have to do, and you know, of course, our first focus will be on driving productivity, okay, and cost reduction programs. But to the degree that we do need to take on pricing, we will do that. Follow up to an earlier comment, on kind of raw materials, I think that Steve had was. You know, it is a little more pocketed, okay? So certain industries will probably have to take some price here. Realistically, we've probably lagged a little bit, okay,
yeah,
to some price increases that we probably maybe should have done a little bit sooner. So we are, you know, currently contemplating some additional pricing.
Some of it's actually happening right now, Terry. So we're on it, and I think you're right. I think we're also seeing some easing in some key commodities, not huge easing. I'm not making that prediction, but so a little bit of easing, bolstered by some price, that gap should close.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Dean Dre of Citigroup. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Dean.
So it sounds as though the 2011 framework puts you at or above that longer-term 7-8% organic revenue growth goal. So I was hoping, George, you could comment on some of these recent moves that move you along that target, and just with regard to Alpha Beta, how that fits the pyramid, new product introductions, Vitality Index, and now 34% of revenues from emerging markets. All of this moves you towards this goal. Should we expect more of the same, or are there further initiatives?
No, I think we like the pathway we're going down, Dean, and you've correctly interpreted pretty much all of what we're doing, driving the top line innovation. That's why I mentioned that 32% MPVI number. That's important. That'll keep on filling the sort of the top of the hopper. Our pyramid strategy, of which Alpha Beta is part of, helps us bulwark some of the leakage that might come. So that's part and parcel of the puzzle. You're right about our emphasis on emerging markets, completely correct. And also, you see some of the acquisitions, Dean, Attenti, Cogent, in much higher growth spaces than traditionally have been the case for 3M. So we're playing all of the sort of the strings on the fiddle, and so far, you know, the music's coming out okay. I'm sure here and there, things won't turn out exactly as we hope. But I think the last piece of the puzzle, Dean, not to necessarily end on any kind of a negative note, is we've got to start trying to put more of the magic on, I think, on our U.S. business, on our Western European businesses. But with the kind of capabilities that we have, I mean, when you think comparing us left right versus many of our competitors, you wonder how ultimately we are not going to win that battle. So I think it's now just a question of emphasizing those a little bit more, and that might give us yet some more lift in due course. So I think you've already You've outlined the plan and are dead right on it. I don't think it's going to change a great deal, Dean.
And just as a follow-up, the comment on Cogent, I mean, you're already in a passport security system, but
yep.
What else does Cogent add in terms of a security platform for you?
Well, they're primarily border crossing, border security type applications, so they are high security military, embassies, those sorts of things where you need high security entry. So they are in they're in the classic fingerprint areas, and remembering that the only thing that a criminal ever leaves at a crime site is a fingerprint, it's still very important to local law enforcement, so that's still important. But as you get up in the level of sophistication, iris scanning, palm scanning, those sorts of things are a kind of part and parcel of the secular move toward much more secure border crossing environments with smarter passports, smarter, shall we say, biometric interrogation of people passing the border. So I think this is just a steady move up the technology space for us and into higher growth spaces, Terry. Dean, sorry.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of David Begleiter of Deutsche Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
George, this is now your fourth quarter in a row of above-market growth. Do you think you're getting credit for that in the market? And if not, what will it take to get credit for this this above-market growth code that you've perhaps cracked here?
Well, I think David, you know, obviously we want the same thing that you do. I think, understandably, investors want to see a track record. They I'm sure, very pleased with how it's gone so far. But I think ultimately, I've kind of viewed another couple of quarters. Maybe we'll get to the tipping point of people's opinion. But it's still a lot of work to be done before then. We've got to continue to work at this, push this, you know, the stuff that we know. We know how to do the innovation. We know how to do the customer engagement. And so maybe we're not getting quite the full credit for it yet. But I think it's no time to be impatient. At least not for us. We keep on doing what we do well, and I have every confidence that it'll come our way in due course, David. But thank you for the implied help there.
Thank you. And Pat, just in 2011, why the higher tax rate, and will acquisitions be dilutive to 2011 EPS?
First of all, acquisitions will be, when you look at it on a year-over-year basis, with the change in guidance that we've had in 2010 here, acquisitions will actually be a little bit accretive for us, okay, on a year-over-year basis, slightly. Tax rate, you know, at this point in time, from a planning standpoint, our structural rate is more around 30 right now. So that's what we'll probably put in our plan for next year. You know, our long-term goal is 28.5, and keep driving that down. We were able to pull some things off this year that were more kind of, you know, one-time in nature. And obviously the tax team still has that assignment for next year to keep finding those things. But it's probably prudent at this point in time to probably plan around a 30 rate.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Our next question comes from the line of John Roberts from Buckingham Research. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Do you think the correction in the display marketplace will flush through in the quarter, or do you think it could be something that will linger into early 2011?
Well, you never really know. It depends on how sell-through goes in the kind of Christmas season is the answer to that question. But trying to address it, I think the vast majority of any inventory corrections must be through. You know, this is an industry with about 6 weeks inventory in the channel. And their ability to flush it through is very rapid. So you kind of see these things as short and sharp. They drop fast. They come back fast. If history is anything to teach us, I think that you'll see the first quarter, once the correction has gone through, you'll see the first quarter accompanied by some more rapid growth, a return to rapid growth. But also traditionally, there's usually associated with this is some extra pricing pressure as the OEMs try to use that as a means of just sort of bulldozing their way through. You know, they just basically they don't like volumes dropping, and price is one of the games that they play, one of the tools they use to push through. So I think that's the sort of environment that you'll see. And I think that will ease as the first quarter goes through, maybe the second quarter. So that's kind of the pattern. Short, sharp, probably fixed in the fourth quarter, depending on sell-through, probably associated with some pricing pressure in the first half of the year and higher volumes. That's probably the way this thing is going to pan out.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Our next question comes from the line of Lawrence Alexander from Jefferies & Company. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. This is Lucy Watson on for Lawrence today.
Hi, Lucy.
Just wanted to ask, it sounds like about 40 to 50 basis points of the gross margin contraction this quarter was due to unfavorable mix, and I'm wondering if we should be baking in something around that range of unfavorable mix going forward marginally.
Yeah, Lucy, depending upon what period of time you're thinking of, is a piece of that is raw materials. We think we're going through kind of the peak of that right now. That actually should kind of start to decline, we think, a little bit. Another piece of this, of course, is the mix of the business that we have between healthcare and safety kind of being down. The H1N1 piece of this obviously will last us for another quarter, so that impact will still be there. But we do expect healthcare will start to will perform better in the fourth quarter than they did in the third quarter. So, maybe on a little bit, but I don't think the same degree of reduction, Lucy.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of A.J. Kedriwal from FBR Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, A.J.
Just wanted to follow up on your comment on DNG and pricing in the first half next year. So some pressure there, but then would be interested in your thoughts on volume and the trends you're seeing with LED penetration, and then expectations for the large LCD TVs growth rates going into next year.
Well, I think you'll probably see some mix shifts when there's any sense of market pressure, these manufacturers try fishing in different ponds to see whether they can catch a big tranche of customers. So that's where I think the pricing mix will sort of pan out. You'll see experiments in lower brightness, experiments maybe without films, experiments with fewer LEDs and a few things like that. But I think ultimately, in the past, those things have not worked well, to be completely honest with you, and the customer has been unwilling to really, on a consistent basis, accept those. So I suspect that once the flushing has gone through the channel, it'll return to more normalized basis. But I think there's been a fairly sizable gap between the standard CCFL TVs and the LED TVs. I suspect that gap that will compress, and so they'll use that obviously to drive, I think, volume at the top of the performance pyramid. So a lot of kind of I suspect turbulence in the even in the fourth quarter, but certainly going over into the first quarter until they find the new mix of sales, brightness, sizes that seems to suit current market conditions. So some turbulence, probably putting pressures on price, but volume coming back would be my prediction.
Yeah, we still expect, flat panel TVs will still be a strong double-digit.
Very strong
double-digit grower. LED, I think, was your kind of, you had a specific question on LED. We'll probably, the industry probably will run 20-25% this year. That number should be about 2x it, okay, probably in 2011. You're probably approaching 50%. So obviously that's a favorable mix shift for us.
Good. And just on that 30% increase in ad and merchandising spend, clearly investing to push growth here, maybe insight into how these expenses track over the next few quarters and then the expectation on the payback?
Well, it's a kind of a continuous investment, so it's not necessarily lumpy. It's you know, once we obviously get it in the base, we'll keep going. It's a little bit it ends up somewhat seasonal related, especially in the consumer business. But our tracking is we have a very good tracking mechanism as to what we invest versus are we getting the sales back, and it's different by business, but it's a long term it's an investment for us. Both in the developed part of the world, if you at all are a TV watcher, you've seen far more both TV ads as well as online ads here in the U.S. But importantly, we're also investing a fair amount in emerging markets. Now is the time to be investing in our brands in emerging markets. And in some cases, that will not pay back immediately. Some of this is a longer-term payback in some of those emerging markets.
Thanks, Ajay.
Good, thank you.
And our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Stephen Tusa from J.P. Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks for taking my follow-up. I appreciate it. Just on the first half of next year, you talked about display and graphics getting better as we kind of exit the fourth quarter. Is there anything going on with the comps that are going to make kind of growth uneven as you look out to next year for D&G or any of the other businesses?
Stephen, I'll be honest with you, I haven't completely quarterized next year, okay? But nothing that comes necessarily to my mind. You look at there still was a little bit of H1N1 rollover into the first half of this year. So, safety has a little bit probably tougher comp early in the year versus, late in the year. Other than that, I don't see anything that is, kind of materially different on a quarter-by-quarter basis.
Steve, I think H1N1 was in the neighborhood of $40 to $50 million in the first quarter of 2010.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks Steve.